Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Saving money on your next painting project at Menards. Pristine interior paint and primer in one is Dutch Boy's best hiding and most durable paint. It delivers a smooth, elegant finish while providing maximum scuff, stain, and mark resistance. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and get your painting project started today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1 million percent. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code audio.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Super Hi. J Cast. I'm Joel, and I'm joined by Damon McDonald. It is Thursday, the 29th of January. This is episode 397, I think. And yeah, Damon, there's bad stuff going on. There's a lot of listeners won't want to hear this. It's going to run a lot of you off, I know, but it affects all of us. I think we have to talk about it, even though it is bad. The bloody weather, Damon. It's awful. It has been raining non-stop here since I got back from Japan. I'm sick of it. Every ruddy morning, it's grey and it's rainy. We've even had a storm here. Storm, I can't remember what the name was, Charanga or something like that. And it took me 2 flipping hours to get to work because of flooded roads and everything. And I nearly turned round halfway and I said to the kids, I was like, look, I'm just going to turn the car around and go home. And then they're like, no, Daddy, I don't want to miss school. I don't want to miss my learning. I was like, you fucking narc.
I'm giving you we can have so much fun, but you're fucking it up. Yeah. Okay. That sucks. I know. We're going through it here on the East Coast, man. We got fucking walloped with some snow. For whatever reason, our neighborhood lost power for 2 days. That's why we're a little delayed in getting this one going. That sucked.
Yeah, sorry, listeners. All that exciting news we have to bring you from New Japan Browsing had to wait an extra 24 hours.
Yeah. I'm over it. Like, I was telling Joel I'm a winter guy over a summer guy. I needed a fucking week. And I don't mind cold, but it's this nonsense with the snow. And it's just amazing. Not to get too fucking deep into the weeds here, but it's amazing how infrastructure is held together by one piece of scotch tape. It's unbelievable. If one small tiny thing happens to happen, oh boy, all services end. It's amazing. Yes. Fucking just, and yet again, they come a crawling every April, whatever it is, tax day in the States. They come a crawling every fucking mortgage payment. But yeah, they can't find people to fucking plow streets. It's just ridiculous. Or as the kids like to say, redunculous. I'm over it. So yeah, I have a trip scheduled for March back to Mexico. And I can't fucking wait to dip my testicles into a pool with a margarita in my hand. I cannot fucking week.
That sounds amazing. Make sure you take lots of photos of the food and the sun. Yes. It feels like I'm never going to see the sun ever again. I mean, you talk about infrastructure. Like here in Devon, I'm burying my head in the sand when it comes to geopolitics. I don't want to hear about it. But like the problems in my life are restricted to potholes, temporary traffic lights, and slightly flooded roads. That's what grinds my gears, Damon. I've had enough.
But you know what though? It's like the big stuff, like the important stuff. It's like it feels like some of this is a real nice distraction from like the real world events. And so I take my frustrations and my anger out on snow because it seems like it's probably the most sane thing to do at this point. But we're both weathered out. We're both wintered out, I think.
Snow and frozen water. I've forgotten what that's called. That's bad as well. But yeah, we not talking about that today.
No. And just to add to the, I just want to add one more thing because it's not just snow. It's been like single digit Fahrenheit temperatures for the past 2 weeks. Like everything's frozen and nothing's going away, and you just have these piles of fucking dirty snow everywhere. And we're just ice now. It's fucking ridiculous. Okay, that's enough of my ranting and raving about the fucking weather. We're like two old men. You're in bed, by the way. I want everyone to know that. You're doing this show for the comfort of your warm bed. And I scooted over into my other part of my office to do the show where I do the podcast. And I'm so jealous of you, but you're just all snuggled up. Now, are you're by yourself in bed, or she's not next to you, is she?
No, I'm in the other bedroom, the one that you and Cheryl stayed in.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So there's a non-zero chance I might fall asleep in the middle of this recording.
For sure would. So will all our listeners.
I want to talk about snow some more because what used to happen to when I lived in London. We had a little back garden there, and sometimes we get snow. Don't seem to get much these years, but the cats would do their poo in the garden, and they'd just bury it in the snow. They'd be like, oh, well, this is handy. This is convenient. Don't need to bury it in the ground. And then when the snow melts, you just get all these little frozen cat turds all over the garden. that was a fun time.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of that. Like the one thing that is nice, though, is like, all of you don't see anybody for days, which is wonderful. Like you don't. The best part was the snow. Like you didn't hear anything. Like there were no planes. There was no dogs barking. There's no. My neighbor got a new dog. Christ! Why does everybody have to have a dog, Joel? Why does everybody feel like they have to have a fucking dog?
Is it a yappy one?
Not yet. No, but. Just, I'm waiting for it to fucking happen. Now, it's actually, I remember seeing the puppy. It was a puppy, but now it's not any puppy anymore. Everything fucking grew like a weed. And we were introduced because we were outside shoveling and the neighbor was outside shoveling. So we were talking. And then the dog just kind of got out of the fence and ran down the street. And then the little kid, little girl, running on the street crying because she was worried that the dog was going to get hit by a car, but there was no cars coming anywhere because nobody could drive. But she was always pounded into her head, don't let the dog out. Who don't let the dog out? And especially make sure it doesn't go to the street because it could get hit by a car. So she was crying, running down the street. And we're like, we had to console her, and nobody gives a fuck about the story. But there it is.
This is the worst anecdote ever on the Super J cast. That was rubbish.
It really was. But the anecdote is that it was quiet. And now people are just so crazy now that, like, now I feel like everybody's trying to go out. So they're trying to navigate the sidewalks and they're trying to navigate the streets. And it's just like, oh, just stay the fuck in the house. I hate people so much. I swear to God, I fucking hate people so much. I would do anything to trade places with you in your lovely home. I would do anything to swap because I've had it with neighbors and just human beings in general.
I have to deal with an annoying number of humans in my life, and small humans as well, ones who don't have fully developed brains yet, which is...
Well, feels quite, like I do too, to be quite honest with you. But they're 40 and 50-year-olds. Yes.
Hey, yeah, I want to talk about something good, something that I like.
What's that?
Because there's absolutely nothing else to talk about this week. I have been playing a good game that I found on the PlayStation Network. I think it's on loads of platforms at the moment. So it's a re-release of an old game. So the game is called Blood, and the version I'm playing is called Blood Refreshed Supply. So it's like late 90s first-person shooter by Monolith, and you play as this character Caleb, who's like a kind of undead gunslinger character who's on like a rampage of revenge against this cult, like an evil cult called the Cabal, and an evil god called Chernobog. And it's so fun. Like, the graphics as what you could expect from like a 1997 first person shoot 'em up, but it's incredibly good to play, like old school fast FPS gameplay. It's the build engine. So I've been talking about like Duke Nukem 3D a few months ago. It's very much like that. Like over the top gore, like really good horror themes. If you're like a horror movie aficionado, it's packed full of references and little Easter eggs and things like that. Really creepy, gothic, really fun, like well-observed, well-designed levels, like crypts and cult hideouts and haunted towns and things like that. And very fun, creative weapons. There's like a flare gun you can use to set things on fire, or dynamite you can throw around corners, little voodoo dolls you can use, like a Tesla gun. One of my favorite weapons, you can get like a aerosol spray can with a lighter, so when there's like little like little tarantulas and stuff chasing after you, just get out the spray can and the lighter and just torch them all. It's so good. It's really, really fun. So anyone who's into
I'll download stuff,
go for it.
I have it written down. I have it written down, and I'll download it. Is it what platform?
It's on loads of platforms. Let me have a look. So Blood Refresh,
like PS1
Supply. So I will tell you. So it's on Steam. You've got Steam?
Yeah. Okay. But was it originally like, because I can like download the ROM and chuck it on?
Oh yeah, you could probably find like the old version, but I don't know. I've not played the original, so I've not anything to compare it to. I'm playing the Refresh Supply re-release, but I think like pretty much any version you'll play, you're gonna have a good time with it.
And it's called Blood, BLOOD. Okay.
Yes.
It's funny that you mentioned games, because again, you know me, how I just get hyper obsessed with one thing, right? And now it's back on to like RetroArch and all the platforms and downloading the fucking BIOS and all that shit, right? I've been playing. What did I play the other day? Oh, I'm kind of into like. Is it, how do you pronounce it? Is it me? MAME? Like your
MAME. The arcade emulator.
Yes. So The Simpsons, I was playing all last night. like all last night, I was playing a fucking Simpsons game. And then, like before the storm, it was, what else did I download? Oh, like older like cabinet games, like Popeye and Food Fight was one of my favorites. I fucking love Food Fight. What else? But then I downloaded like a bunch of PS1 games. I have a whole list of the things that I downloaded. I should bring that. I should just like walk four steps, but I really don't feel like doing it. but I'll send them to you, and all the ones that I have procured. And yes, I'm in the boat again. Oh, I've been playing Mega Man. Mega Man 4, I want to say.
Okay. I love that. Mega Man X for the Super Nintendo one. That's a classic.
That's what I'm playing.
Absolute banger soundtrack.
Yep. Yeah, I like that. I like playing that. And then there's another one that's very similar to that, but it's like this war guy. Oh, maybe I should get my paper. All right, just song and dance for me, and then I'll be 2 seconds. Let me get my paper.
Yeah, so I'm going to fill in something that I've been playing. So Damon very kindly sent me his Ambernic device, like it's a retro handheld gaming device. And my daughter Esther has absolute insane obsession now with Pokemon. It is every living waking moment of the day is consumed with Pokemon. She is like walking into the toilet, "Daddy, is it Gravelet evolves into Golem? Is that right?" And just it's nonstop Pokemon mayhem all day. So we started a game.
It's a ROM hack of a Pokemon game called, I think it's Pokemon Fire Red and Pokemon Leaf Green, but someone has kind of basically edited them together and done a ROM hack with little quality of life improvements. So we've been playing through that together, and at work I printed out like a chart for her with all the Pokemon, the different types and what is effective against which type. So when she's like fighting against an electric type, daddy, it's an electric, like what should I use? And I'm like, go and check your chart. And then she's looking it up and I need a rock type or ground type. And she's so into it at the moment. And of course, like a lot of the Japan trip was consumed by Pokemon stuff, and we've got real little Pokemon toys, Gashapon toys and plushies and stuff. But it's a real joy to be able to share something.
You'll make my children crazy. Naughty man. My crazy daughter and my crazy husband.
What would you prefer Esther to be interested in, Mally?
She would like reading a book.
She is reading a book. She's got the Pokemon Encyclopedia. She can't tear her eyes away from it.
Let me finish first, please. Do not interrupt.
Oh.
She like to read like Minibees, Krisha, and now the Pokemon Encyclopedia, and Pokemon game, Pokemon. But me love Pokeball.
Well, yes, we all do. Yes.
Yeah. Who doesn't love a delicious Pokeball?
Yeah. Lovely. Well, listen, again, yeah, I think I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to side with Joel on this one. And you can let her know that. She has an interest. She has a passion for this. You know, it's fun. It's entertaining. It's not hurting her studies in any way, shape, or form. And, it's just, you know, I mean, listen, your husband does a fucking podcast every week. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, a podcast which paid for a fucking holiday. That's,
you know?
Never going to let her forget that one.
No, she's well aware of this, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. I would have mentioned that every day.
Like, yes.
See this microphone? See what a hell good I am? I got my list. All right, and tell her not to interrupt our show anymore, please. Jeez.
So unprofessional.
Unbelievable. We're stars. We're doing a show here. Arrow Fighters. Mm-hmm. Alpha Mission 3. Asterix. Burger Time. Battletoads. Familiar with the Battletoads? It's kind of Ninja Turtle ripoff.
Yeah, that's got a notoriously difficult level, like a jet ski level or something, which is infamous for being really absolutely impossible.
All right, let me cross that off my list. I downloaded, it's called Boogie Wings. Boogie Wings? I don't know if you're familiar with Boogie Wings.
I'm not familiar with Boogie Wings, though.
You know what I did? I watched some fucking drone on YouTube. Top 50 games for, and then, whatever the fuck it's called. What else? Cruising USA. Contra, Double Dragon 2, Metal Slug.
Yeah, that's a classic.
All right. Outrun, Streets of Rage 2, obviously.
I played the original Outrun in the retro arcade in Tokyo.
Ooh.
We had an absolute blast on that.
That's pretty rad. Simpsons, Tekken 3.
I love Tekken 3. Also, another banger soundtrack.
Yes. And then, that's about it. I mean, those are for that. And then I downloaded a bunch of other stuff. So, yeah. There you go. There you go, people. Video Game Talk 101, brought to you by Kraft. All right. So, there's not a lot going on in the world of NJPW, right?
No, we timed it all wrong. We should have done last week's episode before Evil left, but unfortunately, with us being so good at getting the scoops, we were just way ahead of everyone else. So, sorry.
Can I give you a little peeve of mine that I've noticed this week? A little bit more prevalent, and maybe even last week. This thing where people are like, yeah, Hiromu and David Finlay and all these people are rumored to be leaving.
Yes, all put in the passive voice.
right. Like these guys are like on the street hearing these rumors. Like, no, I didn't hear a rumor. It's not a rumor. Like, you heard it from us.
What's interesting to me, Damon, right, is that when we dropped that news about Evil leaving and the other rumors about other wrestlers, immediately that is accepted as fact by the entire wrestling community. You know, Fightful are reporting it as fact. Wrestling Observer reporting it as fact. Some of them crediting us, some of them not. But there was nobody out there saying, sorry, who said that? Super J-Cast? No, they're probably bullshitting. They're probably making it up. When we release that, it's like, yes, that is gospel. But if it's me releasing something about, you know, Tony Khan interfering with New Japan booking, then suddenly it's like, oh, what's this rinky-dink little podcast making up lies?
I know.
So the sort of selective, like whether or not people are choosing to believe that we're a credible source is extremely funny to me.
It really is. Like, I would just say the rumors are out there that this, and you know, it's like, I don't know. Like, I'm not saying everybody's got to fucking credit us because
that's absolutely.
I would like that. That would be how. I mean, listen, I kind of remember doing footnotes and citing sources and all that stuff. But okay, that's another story altogether. But it's like, you know, it's like this casual. Oh yeah, well it's out there, you know. It's in the circles they're talking. Like, dude, let me be very clear. You wouldn't have fucking known shit if we didn't say nothing. So yes, that was my pet peeve of the week. But like, honestly, at this point, we know we're great. So what the fuck, you know? What are we gonna do? What are we gonna do? Oh well. But yeah, I did see. But there were. I will say this though. I will say that there were a lot of people that did cite us. And again, I try not to go looking. I try not to go a looking for shit like that because it just drives me nuts. But sometimes I did see people mentioning us as a source. And thank you for that. That here's all that does. All that does is we don't make money from that. I mean, maybe indirectly, maybe somebody would see that and be like, oh, these guys are usually on point, and that folder of Joel and Damon are right, or is getting pretty thick. Maybe I'll sign up for a Patreon. Okay, so maybe there is financial incentive in that. But 9 times out of 10, we don't I don't give a shit how many fucking Twitter followers we have. I don't give a fuck about, like none of that matters to me. It's just, like, just I don't know, just be like, I heard it from them. And that's fine. And then the other one was where people were like, yeah, I heard it on the Voices of Wrestling flagship. Yeah, and I was like, wait. I mean, I know they're not doing it nefariously, Rich and Joe Lanza, but...
Yeah, and Joe's working very hard to put us over on the flagship Patreon, calling us a Super J-Cup.
I know.
The entirety of the audio.
But he did correct, like, he did correct himself. He did get on there on the Open for Everyone show. And he did, you know, make sure that was taken. But I get that.
That was extremely funny. Like, I wasn't annoyed by that at all. I was just like, oh my God, he's going to be so cross. Like, because I knew there'd be about a million people messaging him being like, oh, you called them the Super J-Cup.
right. But when I heard that, I was like, did he say cup? And then I rewound it. And he's like, yeah, he said cup. And then I'm thinking,
that's two guys, one cup.
Hey. Man, remember the first time you saw that? You're just like, what?
Oh, what the this fuck? Is a thing now. This is content.
Right, this is the content. Like, I just remember, like, and I was just like, you know, it was like, you're just like, oh my God, you're kind of turning away, but you are looking at it because you wanted to see what else they were going to do. And it was just like, look, at first I was like, this can't fucking be real. You know what I mean? Like, this just can't be real. I don't know. Who knows? But that was the day where I was like, wow, the internet is a fucked up thing. That was the moment, I think. But yes, Joe was very quick to, but I get that where you kind of like, you just have like a pronunciation or you just have something in your head and you know it's wrong even as you're saying it, but you can't dial it back. Like, you can't, you're just on that. And he said it again and again and again. I was like, Joe, stop. Please, it's cast. We've been with you for so long. Why would you?
Yeah, the listeners know what he meant.
Yeah, I know. Everyone did. But I appreciate that, too. And here's the thing, too. Like, he reached out to us when news was going around, and he was like, I want to make sure that I get it right from the horse's mouth, so to speak. And then he goes, I just want to make sure that it was everything that we were talking about here is on your Discord, because I don't want to leak, you know, I don't get anything out. I was like, I got to be honest with you, I have no idea what's on our Discord. I'm banned from our Discord. And he had a good talk about that. I said, let me check with Joel. And Joel got back to me. He's like, yep, fire away. So there you go. There's the behind the scenes, behind the curtain of this massive pro wrestling conglomerate, media conglomerate that we have. Voices of wrestling.
So I always feel big and important when people reach out to me to clarify things, and I love that they do that. Like Trish has done that recently. Case Lowe did that before he interviewed Tony Khan. He was trying to, you know, clarify exactly what we had heard about the Nakamura situation. And look, not to rake up old graves, but I should note in that interview, Tony Khan never denied it. No. Didn't deny it, did he?
No, it was a masterclass actually in not denying it, you know, and kind of deflecting it a little bit of, oh, these wackos, they don't know what's in my mind.
And respect to Case for, you know, being face-to-face with him and asking him that question, because he didn't have to. Could have, you know, done softballs like a lot of other people would have done. But no, he asked the tough question and phrased it in like the perfect way so that there was no sort of plausible deniability. You know, didn't say anything like, oh, did you block the match from happening? Which could have been easily denied. But, you know, the way that he said, I can't remember exactly what he said, but, you know, what we heard, that he was upset about it and trying to stop it or whatever it was. And yeah, it's just an excellent job by Case. Well done.
Good job. Oh, man. I you ever have this, though? You hear somebody for a long, long time, right? And you hear the name, you hear of the voice, and then you see the person. And it's like, I just didn't expect the voice with the person. He looks like he's a grown fucking man. Like, he's like, you know, like a good-looking, young, strapping guy. I was like, wow, look at this. It's kind of like, you know, I guess, again, when you listen to the radio, and then you finally see the person. You're just like, wow, I didn't expect that to come from that. Both good and bad. So
he reminds me of, there's a really good YouTube channel that I follow called, I think it's OTR. So it's a guy who does like long form sort of Asian food documentaries. Yeah, OTR Food and History. So like, there's like a 2-hour video on the history of nutmeg and things like that, or the history of the tomato, which it might sound rubbish, but they're actually incredible. They're really, really good. And he kind of reminds me of the guy from that. It's the moustache. I need to grow a moustache again. That was a good look, but Mally could not stand it.
No, just the stash? No beard to accompany?
No, I want just the stash.
Yeah,
I want to look like stash. Fucking Don Fry. Or Dan the B7.
Magnum TA. Yeah. Dan Severn. I told you my Dan Severn story, didn't I? Please tell me I told you my Dan Severn story.
Tell me again.
All right. Here we go, listeners. So doing the wrestling stuff in the 90s on Dennis Carluzzo's shows, Dan Severn was the NWA champion, and he would be on the shows. And for whatever reason, he took a liking to us. Like, I don't know. He just thought we were just ridiculous, but... he took a liking to us, and we would talk to him all the time. And
what was he like? Anyway,
nice dude, just an easygoing guy. Like, you know, he's the kind of guy that's like, you know how there are people that maybe you come across in your life where they're just a killer, but yet they're just like the most quiet, humble guy, you know, but like he can snap your neck. Exactly. That's exactly the vibe I got from you.
Yeah.
Awesome dude. He was really good. Really fun. So again, when we would go in the locker room at these shows, and he would be there. I mean, he would come up to us and be like, "Oh, I'm Dom Swiggy," blah blah blah. So anywho, fast forward, probably about I want to say like 5 years, 7 years, maybe even longer. They had one of those little wrestle convention things at ECW in 2300, and somebody got me in for free, so I went. And he was there, and I went up to him, and I was like, I don't know if you remember, you know, Dennis Carluzzo shows, and he's like, Madonna Wayne. I was like, hey, how you doing? And he's talking to me, and he comes over, gives me a big hug, and he's like, I still have a picture, the 8x10 that you guys signed in my gym. It's hanging in his wall, in his house. I swear to God, at least at that time, I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. He goes, dude, I thought you guys were so great. I was like, we were fucking nothing. Yeah, so there's an autographed picture of me and Gimmick on his wall. And I just thought that was the craziest fucking thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Crazy. And I told you recently, like when WrestleMania was in town, they had WrestleCon there. And I hadn't seen her in a long, long, long time. But Dawn Marie, when she started out, on Carlusa, Dennis shows, East Coast. And fun fact, I don't know if you noticed, I was the first person to see her enhanced breasts. She got the enhanced breast gimmick, right? And I was like, oh.
Breast gimmick.
I didn't know what to call it. The augmentation of booby, I don't know. She whipped them right out for me. I was like, hey, that's unexpected, but they look fantastic. very nice. She was very nice. She actually was, I don't know if they got married, but Simon Dine, Lance Diamond, again, who got started around here. Like, we would hang out with him. Like, I remember he came to my house, and he was in our fantasy baseball league. I just remember him just kind of, we were just all, but we were like this was before he went to ECW and before obviously TNA and all that stuff. We were just like chilling in my dining room, the very house I own right now. And he was in our fantasy baseball draft. So again, fun facts there, guys. There you go. There's a little, some interesting stories. I saw Boogie. I have my picture hanging up at Dan Severn's gym, and, Lance Diamond was in my fantasy baseball. Thank you very much.
It's a cool little day there. Let's wrap it up.
Yeah. I mean, this all didn't happen the same day, Joel. I just a stretch out. Yes.
The evil news is official now. We're 1 week removed from that. I've been a bit surprised, actually, at the response to this. Like, I know people didn't, you know, were not keen on the gimmick and the House of Torture and everything, but like the people have been like breaking out the champagne and stuff and thinking like, oh, that's it. There's going to be no more interference and cheating in New Japan Pro Wrestling ever again. Now that Evil's gone, like I'd hate to break it to you, but Evil wasn't booking himself. You know, he hadn't gone rogue. It wasn't like Takaki Watanabe deciding to do interference and cheating. Like he was told to do that because the people booking the product wanted that to be part of the show, and again, I hate to say this, but someone else is probably going to take his place, because if they want a sort of upper mid-card guy doing cheating heel interference, they're going to find an upper mid-card guy to do cheating heel interference. That doesn't end just because Evil left, you know?
Right. I mean, I hate to break the bad news to people, but it's always been an element in the company. I know that's shocking, but yes, I mean, dare I bring up Tiger Jeet Singh? Dare I bring up, pick random mid-party kind of heelish, somewhat brawly kind of guy? Like, it's a part of what it is. Now, again, our biggest complaints, and we've gone through this a million times, but, you know, where it's placed on the show and where it's placed on the card, there's a place for that. Jim Crockett Promotions, they had things that I could, really didn't care for. But again, it's where it's placed. Where it is placed is the important part. So, yes. I guess it's just a reaction to, I like this style of wrestling, and this guy does the style that I really hate. And trust me, we're driving in the same car with this. But... yeah, it's not the guy.
Be angry with the booker. It's not the guy who's just doing what he's told. Yeah, that really surprised me. Like Ren Narita's right there. Like, he's going to slot right into that place, I'm afraid. Right. So I would be very wary for people who are like, oh, yeah, that's it. It's all over now. We've had 5-6 years of terror, and that's it. We're done now. So, they made him do it, guys. They told him to do it.
And dare I say... it might even be worse.
Because... yeah, Evil was good at it. That's right. What it's going to look like with someone who's not as good as him at that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's... be careful what you wish for, people. Be careful what you wish for. Again, I'm not saying... like, I was going to say, you know, it's not like he's this guy that's bringing in houses, but He had his fair share. He didn't do bad when he was asked to put people in the building. So, yeah, I mean, look, be careful what you wish for, right? Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, he had an aura, at least. You know, being in there to see that entrance at the Tokyo Dome, guy looked like a fucking rock star.
He really did. That was one of my favorite entrances, like, of all time in pro wrestling. It really was awesome.
It was amazing.
You know what I really like about Evil? Let's talk about the positives of Evil. You know what I really liked about Evil? And it's such a minor thing, but I don't know why I love it so much. Is, you know, they introduce, you know, ring introductions, Evil, and they do the camera shaky thing.
Yes.
Well, I don't know why I love that so much.
And there was during the Wolf match as well when he did the home run thing with the chair. And then, you know, he puts his hand above his eyes to sort of watch the ball sailing out of the dome. And then he just turns. It was just a picture perfect. He turned to just look at the camera, little smirk on the face, and then, ha, ha, ha! It was so good. Like, it was actually perfect. And I was like, holy shit, this guy is good at his job.
Yeah, he's good at his job. You might not like his job, but he's good at it.
I miss him. I miss him already, Dave.
You already? Really? Aw. He'll be all right. Remember him? This is like the Wayback Machine we're doing here.
Remember when is the lowest form of comedy?
Conversation, I know. Take off your clothes. I got to stay away from the... I've been repeating that one over and over again. Never forget Strong Style. Never forget. you know, the beginning, the infancy of Evil and the fucking laser beams out of his hand.
Yes.
That was the worst. I hated that. I really did. I didn't like, and the gigantic, the sickle. Yeah. Oh, I hated that thing. stupid guy. I don't know. Look, what are you going to do? I think, again, I think I said it last week. I think people might be undervaluing him and his importance to New Japan. Again, do I think he's this mythical character that should be right up there with the best of New? No, I'm not going to go that far. Am I a fan of House of Torture in general? Not really. But again, where it's placed is really what's important. But I think people are going to... I think people undervalue him a lot, and I think they'll see that in the middle of the show. I really do.
I really hope he's successful in WWE.
How can he not be?
I'm genuinely excited to watch and see what he looks like. That, you know, putting aside all the, you know, fascist Trump support, blah blah, all that Vince McMahon, like, notwithstanding. But I hope he's good. That would be so awesome for him if he turns.
How can he not be? We joked about GOD, and, you know, there are certain guys on the New Japan roster where you're just like, you know, Hikuleo, even though you can't, you know, find him. He's on the side of a fucking milk carton at this point. But there are guys.
Dave. I hate to interrupt, but can I just spell this out for people who don't understand the difference in attitude when AEW signed New Japan talent and WWE signed New Japan talent? WWE signed all the crap wrestlers that we don't like, okay?
Right!
It's that simple. They don't sign all the best wrestlers in their prime before they've done anything in New Japan, right? They take the rubbish ones that we're bored of watching, all right?
Are there people complaining about that? If we could pay people saying that, like, we're pro WWE, or we're all for people going to WWE?
Yeah, but I'm leaning into that. I'm sending the fruit baskets myself.
Oh, good. Oh, my God. People are just, ugh. Anyway, yeah.
But those people, if you, those people listening, don't stop doing it. Like, please keep going, because I need that. I need to keep the gimmick alive. So you're doing the Lord's work.
You really are. You're really making it easy for us. Appreciate that. I think he'll be... they have the production value.
In the Royal Rumble. Imagine if he's in the Royal Rumble, Damon.
That's...
Imagine if he wins the Royal Rumble.
Oh, lordy lo. Look at us. I don't think he's going to be in Royal Rumble.
No, neither do I. But it would be sick if he was.
It would be. But I said WrestleMania? I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see they probably package him as, you know, good. What's good doing here? Oh, Jesus, I stink. That was a terrible joke. God almighty. All right. Where do you want to go first?
Just a little news item here. Taro Okada. So he is the president of Stardom, I think. And he is now running New Japan's upcoming management strategy headquarters. So they are New Japan Pro Wrestling will establish a new management strategy headquarters on February 1st in order to strengthen strategic marketing in order to further expand its business. And the head of the division will be director Taro Okada, the president of Stardom. So Okada wrote, "I'm sorry for causing you any worry with the landmark announcement that has a grandiose name like Management Strategy Headquarters. It's a department dedicated to firmly supporting the best New Japan Pro Wrestling, both in the ring and on the front lines. We appreciate your continued support for New Japan Pro Wrestling." So anyone who's been following Stardom knows that they have been extremely successful, and a lot of people think some of that is down to Okada and his leadership, and there are some people who think, you know, he's got a hand in the booking and just generally just showing very, very strong leadership and is in part responsible for the growth that Stardom have achieved. Now, I think it's only a matter of time before he's steering the ship in New Japan. And again, I've not heard anything. This is not a pastrami or anything. This is just me connecting dots. To me, this kind of feels like a soft jump, where he's having, you know, a little been put in charge of some New Japan stuff as well, so he can learn the ropes there and kind of be groomed into the position, which would also give the opportunity to groom the whoever his successor is going to be in Stardom, with a view to him eventually transitioning over to taking over New Japan in some role, whatever role that might be. I don't know if that's going to be president of New Japan and, you know, Tanahashi is given some kind of, you know, different role, like figurehead role. I don't know, but to me, this smells like him kind of being shuffled over to New Japan. I don't know. What did you make of it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I have a pastrami sandwich. I have a nice thick slice. I have a friend who... I don't know if I can pull off this joke or not. I have a friend who was in production in New York City. And they rented out this gigantic penthouse. And then I had to do a shower scene with, like, I had to shoot this guy taking a shower. This guy, I was like, oh, wow. So I don't know. Maybe you're on to something, Joel. Do you remember that fucking video? Yeah.
Holy Look, if anyone Hannah. Has seen episode 2 of Night of the Seven Kingdoms, Taro Okada, bigger than that, I've heard.
Wow. Look at that. It's a Boogie Nights kind of thing. To answer your question seriously, does feel like assistant general manager, doesn't it? It feels like, here's a good way for you to kind of learn what we've been doing. Maybe your good ideas and our years of doing this, there's some synergy there. So, yeah. We don't know. Who knows what the future holds. But, like, if you were going to groom someone for a position of stature in New Japan Pro Wrestling, this would probably be a great way to do so, right? And Stardom did have a great year. So, it's kind of like for the American football fans, this is the we're on the search for a new offensive or defensive coordinator who hopefully will take over the head coaching reins. So, we'll see. There's more to that. And again, we'll see that play out as the months and years by. But I definitely think there's, like, something to that. I honestly do.
I also want to once again plug the predictions thread I've got open on the Patreon. You don't need to be a paid member to do that. But please give me some wacky predictions for 2026 in New Japan, because there are barely any at the moment. It's not enough to fill an episode. So please, even if you're not planning on listening to the episode, just throw a wacky prediction in there. And you might be right at the end of the year, and I'll give you lots of credit. So get on that. It's on the Patreon. Or even send it to me on Twitter. I don't care. Like, a friend of the show, Daryl, sent me pages, the most unhinged prediction you'll ever hear. And I'll read that out on the Patreon. Patreon special. But yeah, just please send me some crazy predictions, people. Thank you. That's all.
Okay. I love it. I predict at some wrestling convention, I might see... Never mind, I won't do that again.
Daryl actually wrote with a question, funnily enough, saying, will we see sexier content than this coming from Nuge this year, included the video of Harold May in the shower?
Oh, no way, really? We're in the same wavelength. Way to go. Probably not. I'll give you that. I don't think anything tops that from a pro wrestling point of view, especially a Japanese promotion. It's just, that was just one of the... And then he sprints down the aisle into the ring. What a time to be alive. What a time. Oh, Harold. I remember we were at Dash. Do you remember that? We were at Dash. No, you weren't at Dash, were you? Were you at that Dash, the Liger final?
Yeah. No, not the Liger final, no. I was year before that, the Jay White.
Gotcha. Yeah. When at Corkin, yeah. Harold was signing autographs. And I forget her name. There was she's from Japan, but every time we came, she would always like wind up hanging out with us. Like, we would see each other, like our group and their group were like crossing over the bridge, like going over the court, you know, from Suibashi Station. And we would always see each other and be like, oh, what's up? And then we wind up hanging for the whole fucking week. And we were there, me, Cheryl, you know, the whole crew. And she gave me her Liger hat. It was like, it's this baseball cap, but it was like Jushin Liger horns and everything. I was like, oh, it's incredibly sweet of you. So she, to Harold May, signed an autograph. And I was like, I don't know if I really want to do this. Like, I was like, don't want to wait. I think I came up with some excuse of, the show's going to start soon or whatever, or we need more to drink or some nonsense. I just felt weird standing in line for Harold May. All right. Very good. Thank you very much.
I'm sure there's going to be some good Harold May stories over at Strong Style Stories.
I want that book. Yeah. I bet you, I know a few of those stories. Funny, like, I was listening to one of them on the show with Joel and Kevin, and talking about, you know, the Booker doing cartwheels when fucking Harold and
danced
Raven
the little jig,
didn't
they? Kevin and Farley.
Yeah, we said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we said that. We kind of talked about that on this show. Or hinted at it, at least.
And did Strong Style Stories credit us for that story? No, they fucking didn't.
What was Kevin's story? Kevin told us.
I know,
story.
That's the joke, Damon. That's the joke.
Oh, I forgot. Sorry, my bad. I'm a silly goose. I'm dumb. My brain, I was telling Joel earlier, my brain is like fucking 9 places at once. It's really bad. All right, where's the 7th place?
You know what I like about Joel? I hope this isn't getting him to trouble, but that he uploaded all the episodes of hit UK kids TV show Nightmare on YouTube. And I still watch those. Arthur really likes it. There's a part of the get. So this was like a kids TV show where you had like 3 kids and then who are guiding one of their friends around a dungeon. But the one that's being the dungeoneer is wearing like a helmet and can't see. And it's all like virtual reality. But they're like, oh, walk forward, stop, sidestep to your left, and sort of guiding them around sort of puzzles and things like that.
That's cool.
It's terrific. Arthur really likes it. There's a bit where there's like... I might be getting into him into trouble. If you do a YouTube search for Nightmare with a K, you'll find it.
He's the man. Okay.
Probably under his account. But yeah,
I feel bad because I haven't talked to him in a million years, and I feel like, remember the one time? There's been a few times where I'm just like, I hate people texting me. I hate fucking talking to people. I wish people would leave me alone.
You like it when I text?
Apart from you. I do. But
my texts are really good.
They're very short. They're never like a paragraph long. They're concise. And again, I think you know. I remember Dan was like, when we met, he was like, I feel so bad. I don't want to text you because I know you hate text. I was like, oh, my God, I you're fine. But I feel like he felt like that it was directed at him directly, and it kind of wasn't. It really wasn't. I think it was just in general. But I hadn't heard from him since. We went to Rev Pro, and we went to a couple. We had dinner. He's a good dude. He drove me back to the hotel. Yeah, no, they're He's a good dude. He's a really good dude. I know at the time he was, you know, I'm not even going to mention that because that's personal. Never mind. But he was going through it, and
the penis enlargement surgery you're talking about.
Well, listen, he didn't need that. That's for sure. That's for certain. It was husky, needy. All right, very good. He's going to edit that out and put that in this podcast right in the beginning. It's husky and needy. There you go. Thank you.
I've heard it's like a can of Coke, the thickness of
yes.
it.
Yeah. Very good. Like a cannon. It's like a fucking cannon, a wrecking ball. All right. We spent 2 minutes talking about his dick. All right. Where are we going?
Well, let's dick into this. A dick into... that's a Freudian slip. A dip into the mailbag. Spirit Formation Journey Anniversary says, how do you see Evil's WWE run to go? Can't be much worse than Jeff Cobb's, can it? My one worry about Evil is his size, because he's not the biggest guy, and I'm worried he's going to look not big compared to the big guys that are in WWE, but I'd love to see him, you know, get a run with an Intercontinental title or something like that.
Look, I think... I don't know, it's a weird company. They're a weird company, so it's hard to say. You would think that he would be, you know, to the moon, but it's hard to say. I forgot Jeff Cobb was even there, to be quite honest with you.
Did you forget JC Mateo? Let's make it.
Is that really his name?
Yep.
Holy fuck, JC Mateo. Michael Hayes sitting there. Yeah, man. Oh, we're gonna call you JC Mateo. What? Yeah, you like my hat? You like my new hat? You like? You want to smell? You want to smell inside my hat? Frederick Ball probably smell like I don't know what. I don't even know. That's my Michael Hayes imitation. Pretty good, right?
Yeah,
pretty good.
Yeah.
Me and my boy, bam, bam. All right, we get it. You lunatic. No, he'll do. I think he'll do okay. I mean, you would think he would just be to the moon, but, you know, look at what they at times they've done with AJ. Look at the times at times what they've done with Shinsuke. Look at the at times Kushida was like, please. Yeah, I mean, who knows? Whenever they get a fucking bug up their ass to do something, they'll do it. And then when that bug fucking burrows his way out of his ass, and you're not going to see him for months. So who fucking knows?
Jason says Wrestle Kingdom 21 attendance, 32,000 over under.
Well, what was the question again?
Wrestle Kingdom 21 attendance, 32,000 over under.
Over or under. Okay, gotcha. I'm with you now. A lot of numbers there. Hard for me to process. 32. That's actually a really good... You a bookmaker? What are you, a bookie? Under.
Yeah.
Under. And that's not a knock. Like, that's not a, but, you know, you figure a lot of these shows, that even at their peak, you know, they were probably realistically in that high to mid 30s. 32 might be, oh, he's moving his comforter right now. Yeah, I would say I'll take the under on that.
Gladius Wing Zero says, "I've got a wrestling question and a non-wrestling question. The wrestling question is, who is the one wrestler who would be the biggest loss for the company if they departed? It would be Yota Tsuji. I just think from what they've... Well, him or Aaron Wolf, I suppose. But Yota Tsuji more from the symbolism that has been attached to him as the guy, Mr. New Japan, leading us into this brave new world.
Yeah. Yeah, like... If for what reason he's no longer with the company, I would go that route, absolutely. I'm really trying to think if there's anybody that would equal that impact if they were missing. I wouldn't even say Zach at this point. Maybe Zach. I gotta be honest with you. Like when the Okada shit went down. Nothing was more
better off at that point.
Yep. But I would say Tsuji at this point would be Probably be number one. Yeah.
The non-wrestling question is, how positive slash negative are you in regards to your team's chances this season, football, hockey, etc.? It's become a bit of a anxious time for Arsenal fans, which is weird because we are top of the Premier League. We finished top of the Champions League phase. We're in the League Cup semi-finals, having won the first leg. And we're still in the FA Cup. So we're still in four competitions and like doing really well in all of them. But there's just so much trauma attached to the misses over the last 3 years or so, that any time things start to go a little bit wobbly, it just feels like disaster. We're like, oh my God, we've lost one match, that's it. We're going to be looking back on this one at the end of the season. This is a disaster. Oh my God. So I think it's all psychological with us. I don't think, at least in England, I don't think there's another team that's as good as us. Not that we're perfect or anything, but I think we're the least bad team in what I think is an extremely competitive Premier League. I think it's harder than ever to, you know, score goals and win games and stuff. You've got to fight tooth and nail for every single point. No easy games, all of those cliches. But if we can not get into our own heads and not bring a horrible nervous energy to all of our home games, where as soon as anything, like there's a misplaced pass, we're like, oh God, no!
Here we go again.
I think we'll be all right. So I think we all just need to calm the fuck down, basically. I think we'll be fine. A little bit of a rough patch, but everyone else is crap as well, so should be okay.
I'm still nervous. What team would be your closest competition?
Right? Man City. It's them again. City. And you can never rule out the possibility of them going on a Terminator run, as they have done in previous seasons, and just like stringing together 20 victories. But they look a bit rubbish as well. Like they're just as bad. They're worse than we are at the moment. So that seems unlikely. But that, you know, we've seen this movie before, basically.
Right. Yeah. It's hard, especially when it gets down to near end of season, where you're like, okay, how are you gonna fuck it up this time? And I hear you. The Leafs are pathetic, dude. They're not only are they a shell of what they once were, like they feel like a slow, plodding, just they win games by the hair of their fucking chinny chin chin, and they lose games like they get the fucking barn doors blown off. Like it feels like talent wise they're very middle of the road, where once they were elite. And the thing about it is that, well, one, as if the season ended right now, they're not in the playoffs, which quite frankly, given their payroll and given everything that the Toronto Maple Leafs should be, seems a near impossibility. If the season ended today, they would not make the playoffs. The worst part about it is that even in like, so again, every October, I'm fucking pumped. I miss it so much. I would say probably around Thanksgiving time, I'm kind of like, I watch games with a complete indifference. Like they're truly boring games. And it's just like, oh my God, this fucking team. Just boring hockey. Now, this year's not a good year. And they've made so many bonehead moves, like picking up older players and thinking that that's going to put them over the hump and blah, blah. They don't have any fucking draft picks next year, like this draft coming up in the first round. So it's not like we have this deep feeder system that's going to, well, we just got to wait for the kids to get back. No, there are no kids. We have nothing. Things are pretty dire right now. Pretty dire. I don't know if they make the playoffs. And here's the thing. They make the playoffs, then what? They get fucking... Even when they were elite, even when they were great, Joel, they still got tossed in the first round. They would lose in the first round. So what's going to happen now? Like our fortunes? Now they're a playoff team? Fuck no.
But that's like an annual tradition for the Super J cast, you getting excited about the playoffs and then it all going to shit and you getting really upset about it. I think the listeners look forward to that.
2 weeks later, it all falls apart. Game 7, there's one Game 7. I was in Washington for a New Japan show. And I didn't even, like, I just put my phone in my pocket and I'm like, I'm not even, because I know they're going to lose. And the show, the wrestling show got a New Japan show got out. And I'm walking out of the arena and there was a guy that was wearing a Leafs jersey. And we looked at each other and I looked at him. I told him, I was like, I don't know the score. I don't know anything. He goes, he just shook his head. And I was like, fuck.
You could tell.
Yep. He just shrugged his shoulders. And I was like, are you fucking kidding? So they had a bar and I just drank myself silly. No, it doesn't look good. I don't even think we make the playoffs. So there you go. Leaf Nation, baby. Woo!
Life Lessons and Combat Sports says, favorite Hiroshi Tanahashi match in New Japan? Oh, I am very partial to the G1 final against Ibushi. And I also really like the Don Taku match in 2018 against Okada. Like, obviously, there's the big ones, you know, the Wrestle Kingdom main event ones, but those are two that we don't get talked about as much as the others, but still really great.
Yeah, I mean, those double matches with Okada were just fucking next level shit. Those are probably my favorite off the top of my head, but I mean, I'm really trying to think, like, what would beat that. You know, his G1, that whole thing, like when he beat AJ and then beat Shinsuke that I went to, those matches were pretty fucking great. That was like peak Tanahashi. I have this weird memory, not weird memory, but it is a favorite. It's not in anybody's top lists of great matches. I want to say he wrestled Davey Richards, I want to say, in Philly, like, the first go around, like with Jersey All Pro, when they promoted New Japan and the East Coast thing, and I really enjoyed that match. I don't know, like for some reason that sticks out in my head.
I like his Intercontinental title defense against Billy Gunn.
Am I saying this? Am I? And this is just me, kind of. Hopping out. Is there a lot of chatter online about Billy Gunn being great and people supposedly telling everybody how great he is? Is that what's going on right now?
It's not a corner of the discourse that I have been exposed to, Damon.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Well, it's like the Conrads of the world. You know, it's like, I think Meltzer said something about, how I found out was Meltzer said something about Kyle Fletcher. And Kyle Fletcher being, and I don't know how Billy Gunn got involved in the conversation. I didn't listen, but I just kind of saw the quote of like how Kyle Fletcher is head and shoulders above Billy Gunn, even like at the bat. Like if Kyle Fletcher now were compared to Billy Gunn at his peak, like,
what?
I don't know.
What?
I don't know how I got into that. But then everybody was so upset because he was like Billy Gunn's not even like top 200 worker at the time. Like the peak Billy Gunn. He wouldn't even be top 200 worker. And everybody like losing their mind, like, what are you saying? He's Meltzer doesn't have any credibility about him. All that bullshit. And I'm thinking, like, really? We're sitting here talking about Billy Gunn? Billy, I hate to break the bad news to you. It depends on what your definition of a great wrestler is. To me, Billy Gunn is not in that conversation. You know what I mean? Like, he's a pro wrestler. He's not even sniffing the greats. And people are just going nuts online. How great he is. And blah, blah, blah. Like, here's the thing. I really feel like people confuse. I liked this as a kid growing up watching wrestling. That equates to greatness and Hall of Fame levels. Like, what? Like, again, I can appreciate the fact that you like them as a kid. There's nothing wrong with that.
Like, I mean, to be fair, I like This as a Kid is something that dominates the entire media content landscape, not just in wrestling, like, you know, cinema, yeah. TV, that it's pervasive, it's everywhere.
Right. Yeah, I guess you're right. But yeah, it's just like, okay, there's nothing wrong with you liking it, but just because you like it doesn't mean it's truly great. Like, the idea of a Hall of Fame in any sport, to be quite frank, has been so watered down. It is unbelievable. Like Hall of Fame used to mean greatness, and now it means, you were okay for the duration of your career. That's a Hall of Fame career. You were tolerable for a decent percentage of your career. I don't know. That's the, have fun with that, with the Billy Gunn discourse.
Billy Gunn's peak was in a dream I had about 20, 25 years ago, which was about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but Billy Gunn was in it and he killed Leatherface in my dream.
Well, there you go.
I don't know how I feel about that.
You want a fun Billy Gunn story? It's not even that fun or interesting, but I'm going to tell it anyway. Wrestle Kingdom, we're there and we were right on the aisle. And as wrestlers come in, and we were there, and the Rambo was there, and Billy Gunn comes out and he does his, you know, DXD chop thing and spits the water, and he had a water bottle and he poured it over his head. And I just turned around to look at my friends, and as I turned around, I'm looking, and the water bottle is in my friend's hand. I'm like, how did you get it? He apparently threw it, and he caught it at the same time that I took the turn to look at, like, my friend with a little disgusted face. he had the water bottle. I'm like, how did you get that? He threw it. There you go. That's my Billy Gunn story. Thank you, everyone.
I made, you know, there's the 7-Eleven egg mayonnaise sandwiches that are really famous, the Japanese ones.
Yes.
I made one at the weekend. It was really good.
How did it make out? How did it turn out?
Excellent. Yeah. So I used, obviously, I didn't egg have excellent access to the. can you stop yoking, Damon? This is serious. Instead of using that, like, Japanese very soft milk bread, which don't really have access to, I used challah, which is, like, you know, sort of like Jewish bread, kind of. A bit firmer than a brioche. And so the trick is, right, you hard boil your eggs, then you take the yolks out and you mix the yolks up with Kewpie mayonnaise, pinch of MSG, bit of salt, bit of pepper. I put in some freshly chopped chives as well. Then you chop up the egg white and then mix it in with your yolk mixture and then put it in your salad. It was really, really good. And I'm not a huge egg mayonnaise fan, but this was quite excellent.
Sounds good. Fucking the chives. Look at you. You're an aristocrat.
It's a perfect weekend breakfast. You know, if you're up on like a Saturday, Sunday morning, you've got good. A bit of time in your hands, nice freshly brewed coffee there, black coffee, egg sandor. It's brought back good memories.
That does sound really good, actually. I'm down for that. Well, I think I need that in my life. Okay.
Next question. Blackhawk says, will New Japan attempt to sign new talent this year to replace what they have / will lose to contracts this year, or will they build from within? Like, I'm on record. Like, I think all these departures are good and exciting because it means the talent that is already there, the younger guys, the homegrown guys, will take those spots and will have to step up and fill that. And some of them are going to be successful, some of them won't be, but I like that. I think we've been clamoring for these guys to have a chance and be given high spots on the card, and they're going to get that now, so that's really good. But the roster is looking a little bit on the threadbare side, so I do think they would benefit from filling that out somewhat. What do you think?
I'm going to ask that they wait, and I'll tell you why. Because at the same time that, like, AJ popped into the scene, and instead of explaining it, and why don't I just get to the fucking point? The fucking point is that it always works, at least for me, better when you have guys that are established and they're trying to thwart off the, you know, the foreign talent that might come in. Does that make any sense? Like, I feel like it's too soon, like, for it to be impactful. Like, I don't want I don't want like a Matt Riddle situation, and I don't want like a fill in the blank independent guy who just got fired from WWE to stroll in, and like that was like the worst of times. But I think the best of times, like, I feel like that component, that element, has always been, and I'm all for it. I got no problem whatsoever. But it feels like it works stronger than when you have guys that are just like really established. Again, you could argue, well, was Okada really established? Kind of, sort of. I don't know. I just think it works better that way. And again, you could argue, well, Bullet Club started with Finn and blah, blah, blah. I know. And fuck Carl Anderson. I don't know. I just kind of feel like you need top guys to battle that top guy element. So my point being is this. Don't be in a rush to go fucking sign some jerk off who just got let go by WWE.
Yeah, like, sorry. While you're on the topic, I have zero interest in Tommaso Ciampa. He's tiny.
No.
He's a mini.
Yep.
He would look preposterous in the heavyweight division. If you want to give him a run at Best of the Super Juniors, absolutely fine. Like, if he really wants to do that, do it the right way. Like, it kind of pisses me off when guys get released or leave WWE or whatever and then say, oh, I'd like to work in New Japan. If you want to work in New Japan, call them. You know, fly yourself out there and do it properly. There's the only way to make sure you're a success there is to do it with humility. You know, introduce yourself to everyone, solicit advice from the veterans in the locker room, take everyone out for drinks, take everyone out for yakiniku, help the young lions go through their drills and stuff at the start of the shows, going all of that stuff. That is how you show you're interested in working for New Japan, not tweeting out or saying in interviews, oh yeah, I'd work for New Japan, sure. That's just paying lip service to me, and that annoys me.
Yeah, well, you need a job. I get it. I understand. But yeah, you weren't thinking. Not once did the two words New Japan cross your mind, unless you didn't have work. I will say this, though. Do you feel any comfort, relief that, and this was whispered to me, so again, I don't know, I have not cross-referenced the information, so take this for what it's worth, but I'll throw it out there. It feels like Rocky's not as strong in the mix when it comes to not only U.S. shows, and there's only a handful, but just kind of having that presence, so to speak. Does that give you any comfort?
Yes,
having that
massively.
Yeah, me too. Yes, yeah. The Rocky friendship. Again, he's a good friend, right? Listen, if you're a friend of Rocky Romero, you're getting a job somewhere. But yeah, I really want to develop New Japan first, and then we can bring in people to complement and supplement, as opposed to, let's bring in our friends, really.
Louis said, would now be a perfect time for people to hop into watching New Japan? Yeah, ideal, isn't it? I mean, this is like the start of a new season, isn't it?
It really is. And again, you're not too deep into these guys' career where it's like you're missing a ton and you got to go back and watch this whole entire catalog. I feel like, yeah, this would be a great launching point. It really would. You're going to see guys get elevated. You're going to see guys have new roles. You're going to see guys, so to speak, get the ball. And let's see what they can do with it. So, yeah, I would say absolutely. You could say that a lot of Februarys, right? You could be like, oh, yeah, get in. You know, we're coming up on a new beginning. Those shows are always fucking great. And, you're coming off of Wrestle Kingdom. You got to put up with Fantastic Mania, but okay, it's fun. Yes, this is the time to get on board. This is the time to get on board.
Doom FPL says, am I the only one who sees the similarities between Wolf and a young Samoa Joe? Their movement, and in particular elbow drops, are very similar. He's shown great signs.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to just sit there with the idea that, you know, he's a bigger gentleman, thick with two C's. But yeah, I could see where people can kind of make that connection. Here's what's even more interesting to me, though. Like, I'm actually kind of curious into how he develops into a pro wrestler. Like, again, we're relying a lot on the judo stuff, and rightfully so. Why wouldn't you? But I'm kind of curious to see, like, how, like, is he, like, will he develop into a Samoa Joe? Like, will he develop into a Hashimoto? Like, will he develop into a more Dan Severn type? Who knows? Like, I'm kind of curious as to how he looks as a pro wrestler as opposed to a guy doing judo in a pro wrestling ring, if that makes any sense.
Darryl says, what do we think of the G1 coming back to the US? The 2019 G1 event was probably my favorite stateside show, and the crowd was less annoying than most US audiences, but that building looks sadly empty. I imagine it's a much smaller building than the last venue. Do you think that we have a chance at a good turnout?
Yeah, it's not at the United Center. It's at kind of like their B building. It's like, it's not like Chicago proper. It's like, you know, it's not in the heart of Chicago. It's like suburban. It's kind of like how WrestleMania 2 was at the Rosemont Horizon. It's not really quite Chicago. It's like a suburb of Chicago. Again, that being said, I think they've run that building before.
What was it? You called it Minor City Slum. And I said that should have been the name of the show. New Japan, Minor City Slum.
So, again, the people that are flying into Chicago, I would say it's probably, not taking traffic into consideration, you're probably looking at like a 30-minute car ride. So, and don't ask me about public transportation. I have no fucking idea. The question is, am I excited? Yeah, I am. I'm going. I'm going to go. I'm going to go to that G1. I extended the offer to Joel, but he is afraid he's going to get deported. So he's still up in the air. Joel's still up in the air. But that being said, I think I know New Japan in the States, people kind of, that's a bad look at a half empty arena. Not even half. It was, you know, very empty. But the crowd that was there, I would also agree that crowd was really good. And again, one of my favorite memories as a pro wrestling fan was, by the way, I was in a luxury suite there. Thank you very much. Thank you to, there was somebody who had the hookup. He worked at the, he worked somewhere who had, you know, they had the box. So, like, ooh, we're in the box. Me and Joseph Alonza at the time. And a lot of others. I think Andrew Rich was there as well, if I'm not mistaken. Anywho, maybe I'm confusing times. No, Andrew Rich was at, where was he at? Chicago. Anyway, I'm confusing Dallas. Whatever.
And listen to Music of the Mat starring you, Andrew
yeah.
Rich.
I was on. I forgot to plug it. You know that? I forgot to plug it. We had a good time. We talked about hair metal. It was really good. It was a good show. Yes, I am excited. I'm going. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, what I remember is the crowd was, you know, they gave the standing ovation for Tanahashi and Okada for the G1 match. And it was like, yeah, and these people know what's up. These people know what's going on. Now, this was before the match, you know, after the introductions, and the place was just on their feet, like, let's fucking go. Yeah, I'll take that memory to my grave. That was a good one.
I do have concerns about this New Beginning in the USA show. Like, are the New Japan wrestlers going to make it back to Japan live? Or are they going to get for looking a bit foreign or looking at an officer in the wrong way? They're going to get executed in the streets.
Oh, they're going to be like, oh, the fans are, oh my God, I can't believe it. The Shield are here. They're coming to the crowd. they've jumped over the barricade. What a great angle. And they just get hauled off. Oh,
this guy's
got a
push up now. Take him out. Take him out now.
Right. Seriously. That would be something, wouldn't it? Very uncomfortable.
The suspect sprayed whiskey in my face, and fearing for my life, I had no choice but to discharge my weapon 43 times.
All right. Oh, lordy low.
Ninja Mortis says...
I'll be going to both. I'm going to the Trenton show, and I'm going to Chicago. So there. See me, feel me, we'll do it.
Ninja Mortis says, is there a place for El Hijo de Fantasma / Santos Escobar in the junior division? Would we like to see Andrade work G1? How much longer is Henare out? So these are quite old questions now, Damon. Henare's back, Ninja Mortis. You'll be delighted to hear.
Yeah.
Andrade very well might work a G1. I'm sure he'd like to do it. I'm sure they're sort of working out whether or not that's possible. You know, it's a lot of moving parts to that, but I'm sure that there is mutual interest there. And El Hijo del Fantasma Santos Escobar, I was a big fan of his when he was in... Lucha Underground. What was his name? King Cuerno. He was great. He had a very good tope. Was it a tope suicida that he did? Or I can't remember what the move he did, but it was.
I can't believe you watched Lucha Underground.
Oh, I loved it. I was a big fan. Like the first two and a bit seasons, I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
I'm proud to say I never watched an episode. Never. I don't know. It just seemed not up like the cinematic cutscenes, and it just wasn't for me. I think he's a definite for G1. Again, there's a couple hoops that we have to jump through, but I think he's a definite. I would say better than a 75% shot he's in.
Draur from Discord says, does Honma always sound like that, or is it just a bit? Although this has been answered by Andrew, says he plays it up for comedy purposes. His backstage promos aren't as bad as he sounds on commentary or variety shows. He's got like crushed vocal cords or something from death matches. Is that it?
I don't know if it was specifically from, but like, yeah, the wear and tear of life in general did that to him. I'll tell you what, I remember going to Cork and Hall, G1, and him getting the big win over Ishii. That was one I'll take to my grave as well, watching that one. I think he plays up a little bit. And the first time I went to Japan, I went to Fukuoka and for Dontaku, and he was signing. And you know how, as you do, you would, you know, I'm just kind of peeping the crowd with my phone and just kind of like, oh, I can't believe we're here, blah, blah, blah. And I kind of pivoted around and I'm kind of pointing at him. Like, I'm a distance away, but there was like staff, and they gave me the old cross arm X to stop recording. So I did.
Yes. I do not, it was a bad if thing you to go do. To the New Japan USA show, do not record it on your mobile phone. Because if you have your phone out recording things in America these days... No, sorry, I'm not going to do that. Right, next question then. Nathan says, genuine question, not just because I used to have a Twitter account for years with a profile picture on, would there have been genuine mileage in Sanada having this stylistic uniqueness look-wise early in his New Japan career? It feels the crowd are behind him every entrance. I really think when he started to embrace his silly side... and did things like the giant Gonzalez bodysuit and the disco ball suit and the Swiss cheese boots, that he just became a lot more palatable and entertaining to me. So maybe if he just gone from with that from Jump Street, like, look at me, I'm a very handsome and silly man. it might have been a hit.
No, those fucking shoes make me actual physically
angry. No, the shoes are amazing. Have you seen the Lego shoes?
No. The what?
Lego.
No.
They're not his. I need to send you a picture of this because as soon as I saw these shoes, I immediately thought, oh, Sanada. Like, he's got to wear those. I'm laughing now looking at this. I'm going to try and send you a picture of this on
WhatsApp.
And this is a clarion call to Mr. Seiya Sanada, who might not be out as long as it initially feared. I've heard conflicting things on that, but yeah, it might not be the potential career ender that was originally suggested to us. But yeah, what do you think of these?
That's good. Oh my goodness.
Is that not just got Sanada written all over it? Giant it Lego does, cross.
And I hate them so much.
Oh, imagine if he came out in a full Lego costume, just like his Lego Man Sanada.
Like Minecraft guy. No, I'm going to bite him in the forehead. I don't like these shoes at all. They're just preposterous. Like, seriously, is this like an ironic, yeah, look at me, I'm so wacky, I'm wearing Legos for shoes, or like they think it is actually fashionable and looks good on a grown adult? Like, these are for kids, right?
I'd wear them. I wouldn't.
Stop it. You would not wear them. You would not leave that house in those. No. Your wife would grab you by the fucking hair and throw you back in the house if you put those goddamn things on. And rightfully so. They stink. And I don't like them at all. They're terrible. Yeah, Sonata's your grown. He's a fucking grown man. No, I don't like those fucking Swiss cheese shoes he has, and I don't like these Lego shoes at all. They are horrific. I defy anyone to find me a pair of shoes worse than either of those two. And if you just Photoshop a piece of shit on a foot, it would be better than these right now.
No, that's these the sort of thing Yo would wear.
Yes, a piece of shit. Just a giant hunk of dung. I've made these shoes. They're organic. Yes, they sure are. It's shit in more ways than one. Now, these are terrible. And add this goofball of the picture that you sent me. His socks stink. His tube socks stink. And like he's got these shorts. They're like, I don't like this person at all. I want to throw him in a lake. All right, very good. Thank you.
These are very interesting questions to go back to now after time has passed. So Reneas Kerr says, do you guys think the new era won't begin until a new gen guy wins the World Heavyweight Championship? Mac19 says, shouldn't they pick up the pace on getting their young guys primed and ready? At least someone outside of Shota Umino. And Daryl says, Shota Umino 28.
Was that from 2021, that question?
Yeah, Shota Umino 28, Yota Tsuji 31, David Finlay 32, Yu Uemura 30, Gabe Kidd 28. This is an enviable generation of heavyweight talent, and they've all been here for several years. Do we know what the apprehension is with giving at least one of these guys a monster run? Fuck. Yeah, I mean, they've done it, finally. They took their sweet time with it, and I'm running with my Tanahashi retirement year delay theory, but it does feel like a new era and very effectively done, and having that signposted by Yota Tsuji getting a big win at Wrestle Kingdom. And on the point, right, just kind of tangentially related, but there's been a lot of sort of consternation about him in the run-up to Wrestle Kingdom not being in the main event, but it doesn't feel like that match or his achievement was less than on account of not being the main event. It feels like a, you know, proper, valid Tokyo Dome IWGP heavyweight title win, to me at least. Like, do you look back on that and think, oh, you know, it wasn't the main event, so didn't really do what it needed to do.
Tanahashi's retirement had to be. I mean, seriously. Winning the title is paramount in this company, and I'm on board with that, except for that show. How would you have all that pomp and circumstance and all and just everything? Like, the post match was longer than the fucking match. Tanahashi had to go in last, and it's not a problem, because the good news is that the match fucking delivered tenfold. I'm not that concerned with the idea of not being the main event. Now, again, if this is I'll put in air quotes, a regular Wrestle Kingdom show, yes, we would probably have, you know, pitchforks and torches in the street. Not this one. Like, you couldn't have anything but Tanahashi close to the show.
Bad Fraser says, who's the bigger LA Dojo bag fumble, Carl Fredericks or Gabe Kidd?
Carl Fredericks. And I'll tell you why. There was so much potential and so much what if with Carl, and he just couldn't take the fucking the whole nine yards of what New Japan was about, and especially COVID and, you know, just all of it. With Gabe, it feels like that Gabe's And again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that everything was peachy for Carl and, you know, Gabe, you know, had so much he had to fight through, and vice versa. But it feels like this is a Gabe decision as opposed to Carl just being like, ugh, what the fuck am I doing? And I think, and I'm not just saying that because it's fresh with Gabe leaving.
He's not even left yet.
He hasn't even left yet. I know. Yeah. I mean, in my mind, he's gone. In my head, he's gone. But I would say Carl Fredericks. I mean, that Young Lions Cup, the feeling around him, like you thought something was there.
Seeing and that him was, paired again, off with Kenta in the New Japan Cup brackets. Remember that?
Right. Yeah, I mean that was a thing. Yeah, I really thought that was a fumble. I feel like that was more of a the question is a New Japan Dojo fumble, and I think that I would say that's more Carl than it is Gabe.
I think both of them are self-inflicted, but in terms of who had the higher ceiling and fucked it up the worst, I'd probably say Gabe, because, you know, I'm looking at this Voices of Wrestling Match of the Year poll. I've not finished it yet, but I think Kenny versus Gabe is number one. And to piss away all of that goodwill,
yeah,
to, you know, what's the next step? It's just going to be like a grunt in what's it? The
Death Riders.
Death Riders. Yeah, it hurts me, man. I take no joy in that. It's not good at all.
Yeah, and again, I hate to say this again, but I'll never fault a wrestler for getting the money while they can. But just
if you came in the booking over there, just have a bit more agency, if you can, to be like, you know what, this doesn't quite fit what I'm doing. Oh no, more than that, this is going to actively hurt the gimmick that I'm trying to portray for my home promotion. How about we try this instead?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you know, God damn, just how high he was. And I mean, like buzz-wise. It might be Gabe, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. It might actually be Gabe. Just, again, he was just teetering on the edge of, this guy could be good. Like, this guy could be it. And again, an injury doesn't help, but I get it. I don't know. It just feels like he went through fucking hell to get there, and then it was just, like, gone in 6 months.
It's Golden Goose situation, wasn't it? He sliced that goose open, and it's dead now.
Yeah. No, it is. It is dead.
Evil Trinet says, when will the Good Brothers' Reign of Terror start again? I mean, you brought up Rocky earlier. It seems like we've dodged that bullet, which is nice. And I think a sign of Rocky's waning influence in New Japan booking. Hooray!
Yeah, I would say that's the case. I don't think anybody's interested in that. But again, there's still people that want to dust off their Bullet Club t-shirt and too sweet, everybody. You know, that's what you like. That's what you like. But I think there's better stuff out there. That's for fucking sure. Better options than the Good Brothers. But here's the thing, too. The problem is that apparently they're very well-liked people. You know what I mean? Like, everybody talks about how funny and how great and how, you know, what a locker room presence and blah, blah, blah. The problem is that they have to go through the fucking curtain and walk through it and have a match. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's the problem. That's the big thing. And that's, I hate to say it, that's what we are subjected to. So, yeah, hard pass. Thank you very much.
Mr. Rasslin 8 says, do you think New Japan should take a page out of Noah and All Japan's book and focus more on their home audience and quietly drop Western shows, minus Forbidden Door and occasional AEW appearances? There's a reply here from Roe. He says, that's what they've been doing. There's no strong shows for the foreseeable future. They've just announced historic X over China, so they're focusing on expanding in the rest of Asia. I like what they're doing at the moment. So they've cut the strong stuff, so none of this sort of American facsimile of what a New Japan show is. What my understanding of this New Japan New Beginning in USA show is that it's a proper New Japan show with proper New Japan wrestlers that is in America, rather than an American show that's got a slight sprinkling of New Japan main roster guys. So do that, like proper New Japan shows, and do them sparingly. Don't kill the territory. Make them special. And yeah, as you can see, we've got this G1 show lined up. So yeah, don't try and do strong and pretend that it's New Japan, because that obviously wasn't working. But I also think at the same time, I would like to see more expansion across Asia. And they are doing that sort of quietly. You know, little collaborations, China, Thailand, things like that. Talking about bolstering the roster, I think it would be smart of them to see and explore talent recruitment options in other Asian countries, because I'm sure there is talent out there who would love to wrestle for New Japan Pro Wrestling. So they might just have to broaden their scope a bit in terms of recruitment.
That even, like, again, maybe not necessarily Fale's Ujo, but, you know, there is plenty of talent all over the world, I would think. And then we bring them to get them in there, see if they can physically handle the dojo, and then away we go. Now, you nailed it with the U.S. shows. They ruined it. And again, because it felt like New Japan Light, you would walk out of a show and like, that really wasn't a New Japan show by any stretch of the imagination. That's not what I signed up for. That's not what I bought a ticket to. And they kind of burned it out a little bit. Make them feel special. Use U.S. shows sparingly. Make them feel important. And then, make them feel like New Japan Pro Wrestling shows. And here's the thing. You work on your product domestically. You make that buzzworthy, and then people will buy a ticket. Absolutely.
David says, also, is there any real chance Ghetto and the booking team are replaced? It's desperately needed. And Too Much Ket says, was this G1 the final confirmation Ghetto is in his quiet quitting phase? From what I hear, he is re-energized now and fully on board and back to his creative best. So, again, my theory that he had his hands tied with certain things and answering to different masters, and now he's off the leash and can do what he wants and push the people he wants to push. That's my working theory at the moment. So as far as I've heard, there's no change in booking committee or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people had their doubts, and I once again, I will say that I'm a true believer that a booker has a certain shelf life. And we've seen that through the history of pro wrestling. That said, it does feel like there is at least in the energy and what's being presented, that, again, it is, as we like to say, a new era. So I'm willing to give that chance. Again, there's probably more missteps than successes. Like, we've had a lot of great successes, but we've had past 5 years, 6 years, we've had a lot of missteps. And again, some of that is his fault. Some of that is my hands are tied. I'm feeling positive as well. So let's ride this wave a little bit and see where it takes us, and then we can make a final judgment.
Andrew says, has anyone in this company done as much for the new generation of talent as David Finlay?
I mean, you figure, not only like him being a guy who was put in a very prominent role, all this stuff in the middle of the shows, tagging with like Juice Robinson, and then all the stuff he did as a young lion. Once again, we talked about this with Evil, how I don't think people understand what they're losing. And he was put in a weird scenario. I really don't feel like the company got 100% behind him. And he was put in a role where he had to have 100% support. That's an uphill climb. I think he's talented. I don't know. It's hard for me to sit here and tell you that, yeah, he did more for, you know, the young crop of New Japan Pro Wrestling stars. But just looking at his entire run in New Japan, it's hard to think of other people that you're like, let's put it this way. He wasn't a guy where you're like, oh, well, of course he put himself over, or of course, you know what I mean? Like he was a guy that felt, at least, you know, with 1 minute into this question, he felt like a guy that I could honestly say was a great soldier for the company. I would absolutely say that.
All right. We've still got loads of questions in the mailbag, but I'm tired now and I want to go.
Yeah. All right, so let's wrap it up. Why don't you plug the Patreon before you go?
Yes, go to Patreon. patreon.com. I don't even know what the link is, Damon. I should probably know that. patreon.com/superjcast. That should work.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work, try something else. And I'm sure you'll get there in the end.
Good job. All right. Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.